The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
This SEC program, and that returns tomorrow. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. Hope everyone is having just a glorious existence wherever you are. We're going to talk college football. Me and Heath and David and all the guests and everybody and y'all. When I say it's more about permanence, as in it's not about the temporary, Auburn has its spring game tomorrow, and I've told you the format is 27. I think it was 24 last year. But Hugh Freeze says, all right, the defense is up 27-0, and obviously the offense gets the ball the whole time, so you don't divide into teams. Like, that's tough sometimes as well. When you got a fully stocked two offensive lines and the depth and all that, so that's a pretty good way to do it. You put some points on the board and say, y'all go catch up. So they've got a spring game tomorrow, and it's a big step forward, and Peyton Thorne says, I'm more confident than ever. And then he had a comment. I think Rivaldo Fairweather was actually a little more direct in his statement. Rivaldo Fairweather, if you don't remember, big, giant, slot, tight ends, receiver-ish, downfield threat. He was an OW, offensive weapon. He was more direct with his comments, but Peyton Thorne's the quarterback, so that's who we always pay attention to. And he said, I'm feeling more confident, and part of it is in the direction of the offense. Basically saying what Hugh Freeze and Derek Nix and whoever else is involved. What we're doing, it's better than what we were doing last year. Hugh Freeze obviously has already alluded to that. Hugh Freeze himself has said that I needed to get more back to how it is I've had success. Phil Montgomery, well, he had some success at Tulsa as a head coach. He's had success, obviously, in this field, and he's a guy that he'll work for however long he wants to work. Been successful, and he's made his money. He's gotten his bag. Last year, it did not work, like, much really at all, unless there were a few Saturdays where there were a case of you had an opponent who really wasn't just going to compete with you, either that day or level of program-wise. It was that sort of season where when you had an advantage physical-wise, then you got some things done. But then there was the day late in the season against New Mexico State where none of that happened. The best performances were actually when the defense, I will say, and maybe an approach offensively and some a couple of bust plays with the offense, like I'm talking on in the run game, like where you got loose. You kept close with Georgia, and obviously Bama, you had the lead. A lot of that was based around the defense and then, again, some pop plays with the run game. It never, ever, 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 ever really worked with Peyton Thorne in the passing game, and that's you have to say the whole thing there. When just Peyton Thorne stinks. Peyton Thorne doesn't stink. Peyton Thorne's played a lot of football and was a grown man. This is going to be his 6th year, I believe. I think it is. I think, yeah, 6th year. So he's played a lot of football, and he's skilled. Heisman finalist? Well, probably not, but most guys aren't. Start in the Big Ten and the SEC? Yeah. Started for the Chargers and the Bengals. Like used to, yes. Started in the Big Ten and the SEC. So he can do things. He just didn't do them on any sort of regular basis last year. And very tough timing with the bowl game. And I'd mentioned this whenever it was yesterday or Tuesday or whenever, that Hugh Freeze wanted to kind of like set a tone and he'll be our quarterback because I talked with Peyton. He's coming back in 24 and he's our guy. And then the bowl game happened. He was like, maybe not. Wide open. Well, ahead of tomorrow's game where the Auburn offense starts with a 4-touchdown deficit, Peyton Thorne says he feels more confident than ever and some of the distractions, some of the guys who don't need to be there, those guys aren't there anymore. And I don't know if it's transfer or NFL draft or it's just out of eligibility or medical and I'm not going to play anymore, but I'm going to go to school, whatever it is. Peyton Thorne went right up to the line. Have you ever seen, like, when a guy's on a breakaway run, and I don't know, maybe it's the end of the half or the end of the game, or maybe he's just being a jackleg, but occasionally you will see a guy on just a breakaway, and he'll hit the goal line, and then right before, he'll just start kind of, he'll take a couple of seconds and go sideways just to kind of run some time. That was Peyton Thorne. He went right up to the line of saying, we had some bad teammates last year. And then he kind of ran down the line, you know, for a few more words. But he was right up on the verge of saying it. And then Rivaldo Fairweather's like, I say it, bad loose leashes. We had too many loose leashes last year. Bad teammates, people that don't need to be here, and they're not here anymore. Way more of a team, which was something that Hugh Freeze had talked about. So that's for tomorrow. And Peyton Thorne says, in part because of that, in part because of the new approach with the OC and the head coach, who's now kind of the OC, and I guess Ken Austin, he's there, correct? Because of all this. And now I'm even a year older than a fifth-year guy. I'm a six-year guy. And I don't have 30 games. I've got, what did he play last year, 13? So I've got like piles of games, oodles of games, bunch of starts too. In addition to all that, he's like, I got better teammates. Now, he also has an NFL receiver, at least one of them, who's already there, and another guy who's coming this summer, and he may be another. So all of that's getting better. So there's a path out, and I've talked about the on-field stuff. But when I say it starts tomorrow, it needs to start tomorrow because that permanence statement I made, it's about permanence at Auburn with the football team. It's not about, hey, the basketball team's been on a pretty good run, so they're a better team right now, but Auburn's the better program on campus. I'm not going to play those word games. Auburn basketball is the better program. Go look back at COVID. It was weird, 2021 thing, and they were ineligible, and there was just stuff going on. Throw that one out. Go look at Bruce Pearl after he arrived at Auburn. Hosting an event that he was speaking at, and he was so funny. He's like, it was before his first season. Well, when I took the job, I asked the AD, what am I supposed to do? He said, just do what you did at Tennessee. You won plenty at Tennessee. Just do that. And he's like, well, that got me fired. So I was like, well, still the same Bruce Pearl. It's 10 years later. Still the same Bruce Pearl. Win, 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 win. If you take three seasons and establish something, and then, except for the year with the deadly air, except for that year, you're nothing but 20 games, if not 25 wins a year. Tournament this, tournament that, SEC champion now and again. You do that for pushing a decade? And Bruce Pearl, he really seems like he's home. You do that for pushing a decade? You have become really, really good as a basketball program. Auburn is still a great football program, but that can list. That can sway to the side. That can be the Tennessee Vols. Are the Tennessee Vols a great football program right now? Folks, until about 5 years ago, I would admonish, stop asking that question. They're Tennessee Vols, and they're a great program. If you have to beat back the conversational dogs for 15 years, is it a great program or did it have a blip? That's not what Auburn football is. It's about permanence, but you can lose it. Doesn't happen overnight. It has to be reinforced. Heath has kind of joked around. Now, I don't know how this happened. I don't think he popped out of the womb yelling, go Colorado, but somehow he's a Buffs fan. And he has added before, yeah, I'm a Colorado. I said, aren't you a Colorado fan? Yeah, I'm a Buffs fan, comma. Despite them spending the better part of the last couple decades trying to drive me away. And so Colorado, they were literally national championship program. They weren't a great program. They were a program that got into a window. And then the window was over. And then, according to at least one fan, they've spent, I don't know, a decade and a half trying to drive away the fan base. Maybe that's changed now. With Auburn, Auburn's a great program. And I know that because of the conference they're in and the fact that they're not in the conference with a 64,000-seat stadium. They're in the conference with, like, Jordan-Hare, 90,000. And I remember the AD at the school where I send my very opulent check, $250 a year, where I send my donation, my gift, I believe it's called, every year. And I remember trying to figure out how many years of that gift it would take when the football team got a $14 million television in the end zone. $14 million for a giant, like, video board. And it's nice. I have realized, though, everyone's at the game. You paid money to go into the game. Heath, have you ever noticed this? When Auburn got its brand new, have you been inside Jordan-Hare since they got that? Everyone goes in the game, and there's a huge portion of the fans that drove to the stadium, paid money, gained entry. You're sitting in the elements, and they watch TV the entire time.
Yeah, I was over there a couple of years ago, and I would say that is an accurate statement.
I was told by a Cowboys fan that I work with, a guy from Texas, and he said he and his dad go to a Cowboys fan Cowboys game every year. He said he's found that when you sit in Jerry World, you just watch TV, the giant television hanging down, and so it's like we're kind of eating now. It's so good, the video and digital, you're kind of eating into the actual on-field experience. But that's what you do when you have everything else, is you spend $14 million on a giant video board that's so nice that fans at a place like Auburn will go, wow, that is a great picture. Like, the real thing is Tim Hudson, Major League Baseball retired pitcher. He's on the sidelines. Like, he's really in front of the game. He's watching TV. It blows my mind.
Well, I keep in mind, too, I mean, this weekend you've obviously got the Final Four, the men's Final Four in Phoenix. Everybody in that building is paying to watch TV. I mean, there's with the way the court's set up in the middle of the field now, there's not 500 seats in that arena where you're better off watching what you can see of the court versus what you could see on the TV.
It is the ultimate hustle. They charge us to watch television from the site. The ultimate hustle was the Super Bowl that year. Was it Green Bay and Pittsburgh was in Dallas when they had the ice storm? And the NFL, I don't know if they do this every year, did it that year. You can go look. They set up a tent just outside the stadium, and it was like $225, and you could watch the game on TV inside the NFL's tent. The stadium is sold out, and if you remember, they actually oversold it. But they sold out all the tickets to sit in a frozen parking lot and watch the game on TV, but we can touch the side of the stadium. We can hear the roar of the crowd. So we're all paying to get inside, and then we watch TV. And Auburn has that, and places that aren't great programs don't. They just don't. Tulsa doesn't. Sorry, it's not coming to Arkansas State. So it is a great program that can change. And when it changes, and I'm not trying to use Tennessee as a pinata, but someone told me, I was asking about Mike Hamilton, I think it was, back in the day, whoever fired Derek Dooley. And I said, you know, how are he and Hamilton boys? Is he already backtracking? Is he unhappy with the high? You know, what's the pulse of it? And he says, Mike Hamilton's not going to fire him. He said the fans are going to fire him. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you ever seen Neyland Stadium with 68,000 in it? It kind of stands out. 68,000 at Scott Field, and I think the fire marshal is driving people away. 68,000 at Neyland, and the coach gets fired. Why? Because Tennessee, at least when Derek Dooley got whacked, still looked at itself as, we're a great program. You go average long enough, and you're not a great program anymore. Auburn is nowhere near that. They start the reclamation of that title tomorrow, and it really has to be followed through, and Peyton Thorne, and the summer is his, and everybody knows that. And when he beats on the door with the mesh bag with 8 footballs in it, we're throwing routes, every receiver comes. It's just that it really does matter. That one position in any sport, quarterback's different. So for Auburn, it begins tomorrow. We break, jump into it next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and we are talking. We talk college football. All we all hear is all college football. Say that all the time. Blah, 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 blah. And all things related to it. And it includes quality reporting and things for the combine, the draft, etc. Hey, who owns the NFL Network? Who is that? What's the name of that organization that owns the NFL Network again?
Let me Google.
Oh, it's the NFL.
It appears the NFL owns the NFL Network.
That's right, the NFL. They got cash? Are they flush?
I believe at last check they had roughly high five figures.
All right.
I'm being told six figures.
Really? Yes. Okay, so the spigot's on. Slash and burn are certainly ways that you can describe payrolls for, I'll say, regional and boutique sports networks right now. The Bally's, whoever else. It's, all right, everybody on this side of the room, you can take a 60% pay cut. Everybody on this side of the room, and like if you were thinking at first, whew, you're like, all right, you're taking a 100% pay cut. Like, y'all are gone. Slash and burn. The NFL Network's not a boutique network. It's really not. And I just mentioned this because I know a couple of the people that this happened. I used to work with one of them. There is much turnover in on-air personnel at regional networks. And I mentioned this. Did I say this on the air the other day when I was here? Yeah, I did. I was hearing the conversation. I was eating lunch while a major league game was starting. And the reporter from the previous year ain't on the broadcast anymore. And one of the employees asked the other, I don't know this person. Who's this person? What happened to the old person? Oh, I bet the old person got opportunities at a national level. Used this broadcast as the springboard. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, that ain't what happened. The other person was on the side of the room where you take a 100% pay cut. Somebody on the good side of the room where you get to keep a little bit of your money. There's a lot of turnover in those, like the Longhorn Network. What is, like, are they off the air June 30th? Do they finally put that in the basket and just shove it out into the river?
Yeah. Their existing, I guess, content will live on in some form, downloadable or whatever. But yeah, the actual broadcast property ceases to exist when they get merged into the SEC.
Okay. Cause I remember ESPN Classic in the waning days. They would have Bob Lee from like 1998 saying, due to time constraints, we skip ahead in our broadcast. Like, they would just literally the rejoins had become classic because they were putting nothing new into it. And so, all right, so that's going to live on. But the network won't. There won't be any humans there. Hal will be running it. The SEC Network, they're not boutique. The NFL Network really isn't boutique. Yesterday, they fired some really good people. And it's all cost-related, by the way. It is no comment of any type on whoever lost their jobs. But it was some people there who have lost their jobs. Other people kept their jobs because, you know, you need somebody to talk on camera. Somebody has to be in Latrobe for the Pittsburgh. Is Latrobe, is that where the Steelers are for training camp? Somebody has to be wherever the Steelers are for training camp. Somebody does. Somebody has to be with the Texans. Somebody has to follow around the Dallas Cowboys. So you have to keep someone there, or maybe you don't. We talked, and this was strictly anecdotal, okay? Pac-12 this past Sunday, this past Easter Sunday, they had a broadcast that at the end of the game and into extras, ain't nobody there. They had a camera pointed at the field. That was it. You can go see the details and what happened, et cetera. But I was kind of mentioning that to a friend of mine that, again, the anecdotal reason, the guy was like, I had to catch a flight. He's like, I had no choice. I was supposed to have a color analyst. Nobody showed. So he's like, I had no choice. Guy left. I was mentioning that to someone. I was like, what do you do if you're an executive? And this guy who's the executive says, oh, well, we're going to try to do that anyway. I was like, what do you mean? Like, cut off network, announcers, like in the last inning and extras? He's like, no, not have any announcers. I'm like, do tell. He said, nah, probably not. He's like, he says, we're discussing all options in making the ends meet. Now, I think that there are also cases where you're forced into something, like in COVID. Nobody can travel, so we have to have announcers in a studio seven states away because, hey, we're just not allowed to do this. And so this is how we're going to broadcast. Well, it's 4 years later. I told you there are still some places. A lot were very slow to reinstate travel because of money. It was an excuse. It became an excuse to not do it anymore. In the pursuit of shaving off dollars, we're going to see more things like cameras just pointed at the field. The more boutique and drill down and specific that network is, the more likely you're to see that. But that's just coming in the future. What up, Heath?
Well, a perfect example of what you're talking about, Chuck. Right now, I mean, the SEC is going to air a lot of baseball over the next couple of months. The vast majority of those games are going to be done by announcers that are not necessarily at the game, that are just working off a monitor. There are going to be some where the guy is there, but there's a lot of them that will be done by someone who's calling them
from a TV studio
elsewhere. And look, baseball is a sport you can get away with that more often than maybe some other sports. But even there, you get some weird situations where you need somebody on site who can explain what's going on. And if you don't have it, it's a problem. And it is. It's a shame that you're seeing companies look to cut in ways that they're basically saying, we can give you a better product. We just don't want to.
When I got in this business in 2000, I would go to a press conference or like post practice, you know, coaches walking off the field or whatever. The on-air person would be standing there and just as soon as it started, that person would start working, whoever the on-air talent was. You go to one of those things now, the on-air talent is setting up the tripod, doing the white balance, hooking up the audio, doing the test. Like, you're a one-man gang now, whereas like 20 years ago, you showed up with makeup and hair done, and you deemed yourself, I will work for 3 minutes because the interview is going to take 2.5. Like, that, it's totally different now.
Yeah, quick anecdote, too, it's even local TV. WRL and Raleigh, WRL and Raleigh didn't cover the first round of the NCAA tournament this year. They used to send full crews to every site. They had NC State, Duke, and UNC all in the tournament. They didn't send a single soul to cover any of them.
Budget.
Oops. They had the money. They just didn't spend it.
Yeah, exactly. It's easier to look at, hey, we're going to cut some travel budget. How much? 100%. Like, we're cutting all of it. It makes the meeting a lot shorter than going line by line to say, yeah, cut it all out.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Oh, the legal wranglings, they do continue. And the ACC and out front, Florida State and Clemson, they continue to wrangle, but it's Miami, it's North Carolina, et cetera. They are on the sidelines watching all of that. Chuck Oliver Show continues on a Friday. Let's welcome on right now, man from Tampa Bay Times. He knows everything going on. We're going to start with Florida State because they got bopped on the nose legally. And where you file and when you file seems to matter. I want to welcome on right now again from Tampa Bay Times. It is Matt Baker. Matt, welcome back, friend. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Bring us up to date. As of Friday, April 5th, Florida State kind of got told there has to be a little more substance here than just we're really angry and don't want to pay $500 million. Get us the latest up to date because Florida State's being very direct and plain in their language.
Yeah, so what happened yesterday is that the North Carolina case, and that's the one, remember, where the ACC sued Florida State. That's going to continue. You know, the AC, Florida State had some arguments about, you know, we filed a suit first and they didn't follow their protocols and some of those things. And the judge said, no, this seems like a proper place for it. The ACC successfully ratified the lawsuit. And they have some compelling arguments in terms of, you know, the idea that Florida State was potentially breaching the contracts. And so they had some, you know, some potential injury to be harmed. So, yeah, it was not a great day for Florida State. But as we do with all these things, and believe me, I'm looking at heading up to Tallahassee on Tuesday for a court case in Leon County involving all this. I also have to always remember to take a step back and say, the most likely scenario by far is that this stuff gets settled. So yeah, it matters who's where the court case would be and what are the specific laws and all that stuff. But let's be real, too. Eventually, this is probably going to get settled.
Give us a timeline and a guess. If you care about the money, I don't really care about the money because everybody's got a lot. It's just we don't have as much as we would like. Give me a timeline and how much maybe of a reduction you're talking about for Florida State and Clemson to get out. Because I agree with you. That's the play. No one expects you to let us out scot-free. It's like we'd like to get out early and for a little less money.
Correct. Yeah, and that's what this is all about. So there's a few dates to keep in mind. One is, I believe it's August 15th. And if Florida State and or Clemson and or UNC and or Miami, if one or all of them are going to leave the ACC in time for the next academic year, they have to announce it by then. So that's the first date to keep in mind. Do I think anything will happen by then? No, I don't. But that's one date. Next date is in February. And according to Florida State's lawsuit, that's when ESPN has the ability, the option to continue, you know, to pick up the rest of the contract with the ACC. And is it possible that things kind of, you know, dominoes kind of fall in and things shake out and this gets moves in a completely different direction? Yeah. So those are kind of the next like timeline things. Beyond that, I have no idea. They could, you know, I could get an email in 2 minutes saying this is settled and it's done, or it could last for years and neither outcome would necessarily surprise me. In terms of the money. Yeah. Here's the range. Florida State and Clemson think they should get out paying $0. If Florida State's math is right, it's more like, you know, could be up to 572 or more than that. Yeah, it could be more than that if the ACC says that you damaged us and we are owed those damages. So there's a number in the middle. Maybe it's in the $200 to $300 million range. And really, what's $100 million between friends? But there's a number in there where I think at some point the sides are all going to settle. It's just, what does it look like? How does it get there? When does it get there? And let's not forget, what does the rest of the landscape look like when that finally happens?
Am I correct in the way I described that? Because you were on the line there as I was introducing everything. And there's North Carolina, as everybody has understood, that the Tar Heels are kind of in the catbird seat because they don't even have to act. Like, go ahead, sue us in the state of North Carolina. We're going to win. And what about Miami? Are they also kind of laying in the cut, waiting on this to unfold, and then they'll pounce?
Miami's been really quiet. They just haven't said a whole lot publicly. You know, it's a private school, so a lot of their stuff is private by nature and is allowed to be, which is different than how it is at Florida State and to Clemson to a lesser degree. I don't quite have a good read on it. I think the people at Miami think when the dust settles, you know, maybe we'll be able to follow Florida State and Clemson out, right? Maybe they will set the exit strategy. We'll have what they're having. We'll do the same thing. Maybe they think that the ACC could kind of crumble and they'll have a landing spot when that happens or if that happens. So I do not have a good read yet on Miami in terms of what they think. I think they would be an attractive brand for the Big Ten or SEC or potentially the Big 12 as well. But I also think they're certainly a notch below North Carolina and probably a notch below Florida State and Clemson as kind of 2-3-3-2 as well.
All right, all this mess because the ACC overreacted to Maryland leaving. My goodness. Let's talk on the field. DJU, he going to be a baller?
I think he's got a chance. You know, he's clearly physically gifted. He was a five-star, you know, top 10 recruit or whatever for a reason. And he improved a lot at Oregon State compared to what we saw from him at Clemson. He's got the arm, he's got the size, and I think it's going to be interesting just to see how he fits into Florida State this fall. You know, FSU's receivers added a lot more speed this year compared to last. So maybe there's chances for them to kind of throw downfield and add that vertical threat that, again, they were obviously started 13-0. They were a great team last year. But if you're looking at what's this roster different, how's it going to be different than the past, maybe there's more of a downfield threat that DJU can bring and lift that offense up in a different way.
All right, so I want you to tell me, now that you've been able to observe and percolate for a minute with Norvell, what is his secret sauce? Like, how has he cracked all the codes? Because people forget, I want to go back to his last season at Memphis. There was a Saturday night game at the Liberty Bowl, Memphis and SMU. Remember, Matt, it was the national broadcast, not the regional thing. It was the Kirk Herbstreit, the big broadcast for ABC was at the Liberty Bowl. Like, whatever it is with football, quarterbacks, retaining players, getting them from the portal, like he does it all.
he is an astute evaluator of talent. And I mean, that's part of it. Where at Memphis, obviously, he didn't have his pick of the litter, right? He wasn't getting the five-star recruits. He was going down a couple notches. And at Florida State, honestly, he hasn't gotten a ton of the super elite, certainly high school recruits. He's recruited well, but he's not getting the dudes that Georgia gets generally. But he and his staff are just really good at evaluating, where maybe this guy doesn't fit other people, but we can make him work. And then the other part of it is they're really good at figuring out what is it that DJU does best and how can we highlight it? What is it that Trey Benson does best and how can we highlight it? And that's, to me, the more impressive thing, where he's been able to evaluate talent that other people overlooked and then tweak things accordingly to maximize the guys that he has. And that's, to me, what makes him, I think the record speaks for itself. I think he's an offensive genius in what he did at Memphis and what he's done at Florida State with different personnel. And then, just adapting the scheme and the strategy in terms of recruiting, right, where he couldn't do what he wanted in high schools early on because of COVID. So he became really good at the transfer portal and has done that as well or better than anybody in the country.
All right, bounce to Gainesville because you've also been able to consume, to digest some Billy Napier for a while. Here's what stands out to me. He told all of us who had never really been around him or watched him coach, not really, I am the most detail-oriented. We will have the most detail-oriented staff. We will have the most staff, like all of detail. And then I've watched him play, and I'm like, a lot of that ain't true most Saturdays. Give me your take on Billy Napier, and how unfair is that characterization I just laid out?
Oh, it's completely fair. You know, when that was his calling card, his detail-oriented thing, and honestly, that was kind of a shift from Dan Mullen, who obviously did a lot of things that were good at Florida. But, you know, the tiny little criticism Scott Strickland has, you know, the athletic director, said about Dan after he left was there's little things that kind of let go, and I'm paraphrasing, but that's the general point. So then you go the opposite way and bring in the most detail-oriented guy around, or one of them. And so, yeah, it's not meshing. What we heard, what we expected, has not meshed what we have seen on the field. And certainly when you have, I guess it gets magnified, not just his the perception of him, but when they're spending so much money and have this massive staff, can't they have an analyst in charge of counting to make sure there's 11 guys on the field?
Lord almighty.
Yeah, it just makes it easy criticism, where some of this stuff happens everywhere, but when you set yourself up in that way and it doesn't work out, it's very easy for the average fan to say, what are we doing here? And that's honestly the way that you can kind of summarize his first 2 years in Gainesville.
That has to be where you're going to be week one. I mean, the pressure in the building that day for both coaches, the programs, the fans, you don't have that sort of thing week one most times.
No, you don't. The Florida Miami game is going to be very, very big. There's a lot of angst, I think, on both sides, and yeah, because they both brought in, the school's invested to bring in Cristobal and to bring in Mario and to bring in Billy, not just in terms of paying the coach's salary, yep, but it's the staff and the facilities and all the infrastructure, where they're both taking steps, but at some point it's got to show up. And the fact that they're opening, you know, against each other, and you've got the in-state rivalry and all that stuff. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of angst around that for whichever side loses.
Dealing it out for the Tampa Bay Times, it's Matt Baker, and he's always a welcome guest. I appreciate your time, Matt. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
All right, M. Baker, TB Times. That's him on Twitter, M. Baker, TB Times, college football reporter. And he covers all of it, on-field, the administration, the finances, et cetera. So that game, man. Hey, do you go to games much? Because when you were with Carolina, I mean, obviously it's right down the street, and you did pregame part of the broadcast a lot of times. But when you go to a game, you know, you miss everything else. Do you actually allow yourself to go to attend many games?
I mean, I love to go to games when I can. It's just, you know, like you say, when I was with 107.5 over in Columbia, I was just always kind of locked down into the Gamecock game during the home games and occasionally road games. So. I haven't been to a home game in Gainesville, for example, since 2015.
Holy smokes. I am so intrigued by that game. And there's a lot going on week one. There really is. Week zero, a little thin. Week one, there's a lot of good games. The immense pressure, start 0-1 and do it at home. I mean, my gosh, if you're Billy Napier. All right, Mario, start 0-1. Like, and I want the TV cameras on Mario. Like, imagine the fourth quarter. 38-14. Imagine the final 4 or 5 minutes of the fourth quarter when you got to stand there on that sideline and you know it just started 0-1. Billy's like, whoo, we may win six. Mario's like, all right, where am I going to get my dubs now? The immense pressure and all the dynamics, so many layers to that, it's just immense.
Well, the biggest thing is, if you're Mario Cristobal, one, I mean, the reality is it's very hard for them to move on from you because of the finances. It's hard for them to move on you because if he can't do it, if him as a guy known as a recruiter, a guy who played for the program, a guy who coached at the program, if he can't figure out how to solve the puzzle in South Florida of getting South Florida talent to stay home again and win the battles and also evaluate well enough to get the Kane program turned around, if he can't do it, then exactly who are you going to go hire who can at that point that's in your price range? It's just they have to be patient with him. It's kind of like what happened with Nebraska and Scott Frost. They had to be patient for a certain amount of time. Eventually they gave up, but they had to give him more time than they would have given an outsider because it's like, well, if this dude can't do it, who can? In the case of Napier, the reality is there will be obvious signs of displeasure. There will be booing. There will be if Miami fans decide not to show up for games, Chuck, because they're mad at Cristobal, how will you even tell?
Well, here's the extreme version of that. Lose that game in the opener. The reason I was like, and then Mario, I want to see him. Because you have your next two games. They're both at home, and neither of them is against an opponent you're going to find out anything about. The fans wouldn't be that engaged if you did win week one. Their week two and week three games, Florida A&M and Ball State. There was no parameter for that anyway.
You'll draw, if you're lucky, 15,000 for either of those games, whether you win against the Gators by 40 or not.
And so that was hard to tell anyway. It's from the inside. I mean, the money that they have spent, and again, they didn't get a quarterback from another program. They got a quarterback from the NFL draft this year. So when you have handpicked your coordinators, when you have handpicked your replacement quarterback after the previous guy's like, maybe I should, and they said, yeah, you should. My goodness. And, I mean, do something not outlandish, like head out to Cal at the beginning of October and lose that ball game. Ain't gonna happen. Have it be because of coaching, which that has happened already. So that's just it is a wicked brew that he is dealing with down there in Miami right now. All right, we break. It'll be, we got to wrap up hour one next.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
In the stadium and guys being able to separate themselves, that's a position that they'll all get a lot of reps on Saturday and a lot of reps. And they'll get an opportunity to kind of show how they handle operating the offense with the coaches not out there telling them everything and coaching every single rep. So I think they're, you know, some guys will, there'll be some separation on Saturday.
Getting at it since March 19th. They got a scrimmage tomorrow. I think they've had 7 practices. They'll have a scrimmage tomorrow, and then they'll wrap up in a couple of Saturdays. We've talked a lot of Lenora Sellers, and they really do love the kid. Robbie Ashford's played some. Enough. He started. Brought him home 2 years ago, 2 seasons back with Coach Caddy, and then had a role at times last year because it wasn't so super-duper great the whole time with Peyton Thorne. So Robbie Ashford is there, and he's a redshirt senior now, and so you imagine, I have no idea. Maybe the guy's like Josh Dobbs, it literally was aerospace, right? Yeah, maybe he's an aerospace engineering major. I don't know. You know what a lot of senior years can be in lesser disciplines than aerospace engineering? I still got 2 electives left, really? I took a theater lighting class. I had 2 electives. I was there anyway. It was a 3-hour. I don't know. I'm out at noon on Fridays. So I don't know what Robbie Ashford's workload's like, but he's got time for football, and he's got some pretty good speed, and he's played. He's not going to freak out. He's seen stuff. Davis Bevel, same sort of thing. There is a 4th mystery Gamecock. I don't know. Is he on a milk carton somewhere? Is Luke Doty still? He's still there. He was a receiver last year, but he's still with the program, but he's not listed as a quarterback or a receiver, is he?
At this point, he would be considered an athlete.
Okay.
He's going to get some reps, but you will not likely ever see Luke Doty start a game at quarterback. Would you see him run a package as a quarterback? Maybe.
He's an OW, an offensive weapon. So that's what Beamer is talking about there. And here's, like, a lot of these names I'm telling you about. Like Robbie Ashford, if you saw him start at Auburn, well, you saw him start. But the guys in this program who maybe were recruited out of high school, a lot of the names that you hear him, Shane Beamer, talk about, guys that need to step up this year, if they were recruited by that staff at South Carolina, a lot of them haven't played very much. There's a lot of young guys who they're saying, yeah, guys we brought in, like Lenore Sellers, they love him and played. Nick Harbor, love him, hadn't really played, and doesn't play full-time in spring anyway. So there's more to say grace over than a little. What up, Heath?
So a couple of things here. One, as we talked, I think, last week about the idea that the NCAA has said we would like college prop bets to go away, that we do not want
they're probably right.
there to be a situation where a player could potentially be tempted to manipulate the game, or where people could get mad at a player because they didn't get the outcome they desired. Saw a story from The Athletic, by the way, about the level of abuse that bench players are taking right now, apparently in the Final Four. Like, there's a kid for Purdue who basically barely plays. He's got a bad knee, but it's his last season. He knows he's not going to play, you know, any kind of pro ball after college. And so he has stayed active and on the bench, even though he's got a bad knee, to enjoy the ride his last, you know, career in basketball.
Kind of a normal thing.
First game of the tournament, he gets in, victory cigar, you know, typical situation, hits a three with under a minute to go against Jackson State, and apparently that three changed the outcome of the spread of the game. All kinds of people, threats and MF this and you, how dare you do that? You jerk, I hope you die. I mean,
and it went over his own personal half a point.
Well, it wasn't that. It was
The game total.
Yeah, but I mean, but just anything you could do to reduce those kind of outcomes of kids getting ripped by people. How dare you not get 8 rebounds and only get 7? That's probably a good thing. So they asked, and at least Louisiana, it turns out, has said yes. The collegiate player props will be prohibited in Louisiana beginning August 1st.
Yeah, that's a Kayshawn thing.
Yeah, that, of course, in particular, given what happened with Kayshawn Boutte, makes a lot of sense. Also, Chuck, we're getting an idea what actual value is for name, image, and likeness. One of the things that some of the people who are mad about name, image, and likeness having become what it has been this idea about, well, this isn't real NIL. If you're just giving everybody on the offensive line X dollars, that's not real NIL. That's just paying people. Well, DJ Burns at NC State has become, I would argue, probably the biggest star of the men's Final Four. Zach Edey is the more established player, but doesn't have a personality that has seemingly made him a star. He's just a really well-regarded player on the college level. But Burns has become kind of a star. He has done deals in the three-week run that they've been on,
yep,
with Adidas, with Barstool Sports, with CVS Pharmacy, with Daps, with Manscaped, with Raising Cane's, and with Intuit TurboTax. And his people said, when they were asked what's he made, they wouldn't give a figure, but according to Pete Nekos of On3, they said it was a little bit under $500,000 that he's
made. Those are big national brands, dude. That's not like Cooper Feed and Seed in, you know, Greenville, North Carolina.
But the thing to me is that is somebody in a 3-week phenomenon making that. So if that's what he can make, you know, what again could a Johnny Manziel have made? What could some of these other players through the years have made? So if you're just looking for a dollar figure on what the value of a star could be, this tells you a guy from a relatively obscure program before the season has made $500,000 almost in 3 weeks.
And there is a chance that that is a slight overreaction, because you got to get it with him while it's still hot, while he's in the tournament.